Thanks for joining Impact Boom. On this episode,
we have a large brain because we socialize and because we're amazing at socializing. And you know, for the last couple of thousand years, we've been told that we're basically evil and competitive, and all of these institutions have been set up to be competitive. And that actually works against our very nature. Our brains are actually set up to cooperate and to empathize and collaborate.
Welcome to ImpactBoom.org. We search the globe to find the people, stories, ideas, and inspiration to help you create maximum positive impact. Each week, Impact Boom brings you thought-provoking interviews with world-leading practitioners passionate about creating positive social change. These designers, social entrepreneurs, educators, innovators, thinkers, and doers share their projects, initiatives, thoughts, and insights on creating a better world. You can find all the stories, links, and other great content at impactboom.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter for the latest updates, or subscribe to the newsletter or on iTunes.
Thanks for listening to episode 473 of Impact Boom. I'm Sarah Ripper, and I'm passionate about visioning, empowering, and contributing to positive, creative, regenerative, heart and soul-led initiatives locally and globally. And today we're speaking with Dr. Mark Williams. Mark is an internationally recognized neuroscience professor who has worked with thousands of students, teachers, and health professionals, as well as a range of company directors who are keen to understand how their brains work. He's taught the fundamentals of neuroscience to a wide range of students, as well as publishing more than 70 scientific articles, and worked at MIT in the US and multiple universities across Australia. He's the co-director of BrainCamp, a neuroscience holiday program for kids, and his new book, The Connected Species, How the Evolution of the Human Brain Can Save the World, is a number one bestseller. On today's podcast, we'll discuss Mark's innovative work in neuroscience, as well as how and why connection matters and is central to human evolution. Mark, it's awesome to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Sarah.
Welcome. To start, could you please share about your background and what it is that led you to the field of neuroscience?
How far do you want me to go back?
Up to you.
So I actually hated school when I was younger, and my mother had mental health issues, and I was in a small country town with lots of unemployment. So I was truant for most of the years. And my principal actually told me when I was 15 that I'd be dead or in prison by the time I was 25. So I should get a job at the local abattoir. So I didn't think that I would end up a neuroscientist at all.
Wow.
I was probably the last thing in my mind. It was when I was 25 and I went back to school because, yeah, there were several things that happened in my life. I went back to school to get my HSC, and a physics teacher convinced me to do science, and that I actually was more intelligent than I thought I was. And it was when I got to university that I realized that there was a whole other world out there that I could be part of, and that there was some really cool people who were, you know, really interested in people and helping people and understanding this crazy brain that we have. And so, yeah, I just fell in love with science, and especially neuroscience, and ended up at MIT in the US at the McGovern Institute for Brain Research, researching the brain, which is really, really cool because it's an amazing organ. And I was lucky. I got in really early on. So up until about 30 years ago, we were mainly studying animals rather than humans. And then about 30 years ago, we started studying humans, well, awake humans, because we had things like fMRI available, and EEG got a lot better. So that was really cool because I was really at the start of all of that. Yeah, which was fun, and huge advances that we've made to our understanding. Unfortunately, and most of it's not known by the world or actually out there, and we're still using the old paradigms, which is crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah, and that's why it's so amazing to speak to people like you who are working so hard to bridge that gap of awareness and education, and then the application of that knowledge and what that can mean for people, right?
Yeah, well, we still have this idea that people are born with a certain intellect, right? I mean, the whole IQ testing is based on this paradigm that people are born with certain abilities, and we can pigeonhole them very early on, and then we stick them in classes based on that. And that's it. That's where they're stuck. And if I had been stuck at that, I would have been working in the abattoir rather than going to MIT. And we know that that's not true. We know that Piaget, he was a brilliant man, but he was wrong. There are no critical periods that we go through during our childhood. We continually change, and our brains continually change throughout our lives. And so we need to be using them positively. And when we do use them positively, then they get stronger and better. And our IQ changes a huge amount during our lifetime. Just during primary school years, it changes a huge amount. So to be pigeonholing kids and teens as either in the lower grades or the higher grades or whatever, wherever they get stuck, is really, really inappropriate, because it's not where they might be today. All you've done is you've tested what they were like on that day. And then there's a whole bunch of other issues with testing students. And you know, there's certain students who do really well in tests because they don't have anxiety around the test.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole bunch of kids who have just as much knowledge, but they get really anxious when they're doing the test. So therefore, they don't perform as well. And then we treat those two groups differently when there's really no difference in what's in their brains and what they actually know, which is also a really sad part of our education system.
Mm. And their self-story they have about tests.
Yeah. And where they belong, right? You tell a kid he's in the lowest, they all know what the great levels they're at, right, where they're at. And you tell a kid that they're no good at maths from a young age, they'll believe they're no good at maths for the rest of their lives, when they probably could have been very, very good at maths. They could have been the next Einstein for all England. And we miss those opportunities because we decide very early on that they're going to be one way or another. And I love, I go to a lot of schools, I go to do a lot of pro bono work in schools where they can't afford to have me come along, I suppose is the best way to describe it. But working with the kids who are struggling, and they're the best fun, you know, they're the ones that actually have a lot of potential. Kids who haven't had all the opportunities before, all of a sudden giving them or waking them up to opportunities that are out there, you know, they're really amazing. I work in several schools where there's a lot of gangs, and the gang leaders in those schools, I mean, they should be the CEOs and prime ministers of Australia. To be the head of a gang and to control all the other members just simply via your ability to be a leader is quite astounding, that these kids are able to do that and are able to control all those other kids. And we should be realizing that these kids have amazing potential to lead this country, to be honest, a lot better than it's being led at the moment.
Absolutely. What does that look like when you go into schools and work with these young people and educators to seed those ideas of new ways of doing, being, showing up and relating?
Yeah, it's interesting. So it all depends on where the schools are. I'm very much, because every community is different, you've got to be really careful of the community and what the community expects. And so I usually spend a lot of time trying to work that out first. Usually I'll speak to the kids because I find they're the most honest, to be honest. And you can really get a really good feel for how things are going by doing that. Most of the time when I go into schools, it's the year nines that they want me to talk to first, because the year nines are usually having the most struggles. So I'll usually talk to year nines. It depends on the school. There's some schools where they have a lot of issues, I'll usually just work with a subgroup rather than a whole year level, because then it's a lot easier to do it that way. And I'll usually work with the kids who are having the most issues, because again, it's much easier to shift the rest if you can shift those. Other schools, most of the schools I work with, I will go and present to the whole year level and get a real feel for what's actually going on there. And then we can work out how we can go forward from there and how we can motivate the kids to be more on task, because they've got the potential. We just have to work out a way of motivating them a lot of the time. And a lot of the teachers love it. I mean, the teachers don't get any training in how to really teach when they're at university, right? They get taught on curriculum, and they get taught how to fill in forms, and they get taught on how to go through the processes, but they don't get taught how to connect with the students. They don't get taught how to communicate with students, and they get taught a lot of paradigms that we know aren't true anymore. The number of sticker charts and the number of, you know, rankings and all the rest of it I see in classrooms, which we know don't work, and they're actually very detrimental to learning. So a lot of the teachers, I think, really enjoy it and get a real buzz out of actually having the opportunity to learn these things based on what we now know actually works. And a lot of them, the really good teachers, will usually turn around and say, this is stuff I've been doing for a while now, but now I've got the science to back it up, because they actually knew intuitively that it actually worked, but they hadn't actually had the science behind it, which is really cool.
That's really cool. And Mark, you recently published an already bestseller, The Connected Species: How the Evolution of the Human Brain Can Save the World. And without giving away any spoilers, because we'd love everyone to read the book, what are some of the key learnings or ideas that you could offer our audience today to highlight why this topic is important and what it looks like in
It's
application?
so important. It's based on my last 25 years of research looking at social brain. Our brain has been evolved into a social brain, and so we have a large brain because we socialize and because we're amazing at socializing. And for the last couple of thousand years, we've been told that we're basically evil and competitive, and all of these institutions have been set up to be competitive, and that actually works against our very nature. Our brains are actually set up to cooperate and to empathize and to collaborate, and that's what releases endorphins in our brain that actually makes us feel really, really good. We have oxytocin and serotonin in our brain, which is all about us collaborating with other people and helping other people and communicating with people face to face. And yet, a lot of the institutions are set up for us to actually fight against each other, which isn't what we actually want to be doing, which is why there's so much mental health, so many mental health issues and all these things in society, but also why we're getting this huge divide between the 1% and everybody else, right? Because it's set up so that very few people can actually be successful and the rest of the people actually suffer. And so we need to change the way we do that and understand how the brain's evolved. Because, I mean, we have the same squishy brain that we had 5,000 years ago. It hasn't changed in the last 5,000 years. And that's when we were hunter-gatherers. And that's when we're actually sitting around talking to each other, collaborating, doing all these things. And we need to realize that's the brain that we're actually using. And how can we use that optimally to benefit everybody so everyone can actually thrive?
Awesome. What are we going to be seeing next in the field of neuroscience?
Oh, big question. There's lots of research now looking at how we perceive the world. So we used to think that we perceive the world as it is, and now we know that we actually don't. We predict what's out there and we generate this illusion of what's actually out there. And that's not actually based on what's there. So when I speak, what I'm doing is I'm creating waves in the air that then move your eardrum and move your little bones in your ear and your cochlea and so on, which then causes activity in your brain. And then your brain creates an illusion that you're actually hearing a noise, but there isn't any noise. There's no noise out in the world. All that we hear is actually a complete illusion that our brain's creating. And same with color and same with smells and same with all of these things. We're getting inputs which are different to what our brain actually creates. And how we do that is still a big unknown. We sort of know, but we don't really know how we know the difference between, say, a dream and the real world. I think that's going to be a big area of research in the next few years, actually working how we perceive the world, because we would like to get to a point where we can create neuroprosthetics so that we can give blind people back their vision, or we can give hearing people back their hearing and so on. But we really can't do that fully. We are able to do that, but it's very degraded version of the reality we see. But we can't do it fully until we understand how our normal brain creates those perceptions. So I think that will be a big area of research, which is really interesting. And more general note, I think understanding health more generally is also going to be huge, because I don't think we've really got a good handle on the interaction between what we eat and our brain. We know that food changes mental health and can improve mental health if you're eating the right things and not eating them, but how that's actually working and why there is such a big interaction between our gut and our brain, because we have a lot of neurons in our gut as well. And how that's working, I think, will be a huge area of research and big discoveries in the next few years, because there's a lot of people working on that.
And neurons in the heart, right?
They're all over the place. Yeah, we sort of think about it all being up here, but it's actually, there's lots all through our gut and in our stomach and in our heart and so on, all detecting what's going on and changing things based on that. So it'll be interesting to see where that ends up,
Yeah, absolutely.
how
So,
interactive it all is.
yeah, you mentioned, and I think it's really important, that connection between the brain, gut, and the connection there with the realities of people's mental health and how healthy they may or may not be. What are some practical suggestions, or what are some pointers for people who maybe haven't heard that before or are curious about how they could take that to another level?
It's really interesting. I was asked to do many years ago a keynote at a psychiatry conference. Because I was keynote, I hung around it. The whole afternoon was just based on diet and how the diet was impacting mental health and how they could turn around people who had depression for years and years just by changing their diet over a few weeks, which is quite astounding at the time, but it's now much better understood. But we need a lot of roughage and we need healthy food. Processed food is actually really, I mean, no, I think most of us know it's not that good for us. And so if you look at what they call the blue areas of the world, which is this is where people live very long lives, live past 100. They say they forget to die. And they don't have anywhere near the same mental health issues that we do in Western countries. And if you look at those countries, they have a really varied diet. They have a really healthy diet, as in they don't eat much processed food. But also, they spend a lot of time sitting around and chatting while they eat. So they don't just eat to get it over and done with so they can go and do something. They actually sit down and eat lunch and they sit down and eat dinner with their families. And so they give it time to actually digest. And it's part of a whole process for them that they've been doing for thousands of years. And I think that's something we're missing out on in society these days. And that has been shown too. And it's really hard to know whether or not we know it is the food because there's been great studies showing that. But there's this extra benefit of actually sitting with people you love and actually talking to them. Because we know just sitting with someone you trust on a regular basis and chatting with them face to face can increase your lifespan by 10 to 15 years and decrease the likelihood of having mental health issues. So you combine the two, and you can live past 100 and be healthy and not have all these extra neurodegenerative diseases, which is fantastic. But it's all about healthy food. It's all about, a lot of nuts and grains and vegetables and not overly processed and avoiding certain fats, and then there's other fats which are actually good for you. So olive oil is good for you, coconut oil. These things are actually really quite good for us, whereas these manufactured ones aren't very good at all.
Yeah, amazing.
It's
And
pretty
really
cool.
empowering for people, right? Like these simple changes they can be making in their lives now.
It is. I mean, it is really simple, and I don't think we realize how simple it actually is. I work a lot with the Kokoda Foundation. They do a digital detox program with teenagers, and these are teenagers who have been, some of them haven't left their bedrooms for multiple years, let alone go to school or anything like that, because they're so addicted to their devices. And they're changing these kids when they actually do, when they get off the device and they actually spend time with people. And, we're talking a lot about the mental health issues in society today, and yet we know the devices cause significant mental health issues. And we know sedentary life causes significant health issues. And we know eating bad food causes mental health issues. And it's like, why don't we do something about those things rather than let's throw more psychologists at these kids or let's change the schools for these kids? It's like, we'll get the devices out of the schools and get the kids to actually move around, and we might solve some of these issues. We have some of the worst behavioral problems in schools in our country at the moment, of all the OECD countries. We're performing really badly when it comes to outcomes for science and maths and literature. And we've got teachers walking out of the profession, and we have more devices in schools here in Australia than any other country in the world. And we know that they cause all of these issues. So why aren't we doing something about it? I find it really frustrating that there's a really big elephant in the room that people actually won't do anything about. And the excuse often is that kids need to learn how to use the device for later on in life. And
I already know.
I don't know. I don't know an 8-year-old that can't use an iPad. They're designed to be really easy to use. So there's no reason for us to be getting kids to spend 13, 14 years on a device so that they can learn how to use it. It's just crazy. Sorry, that was my rant, wasn't
No. I'm with you. I'm with you.
it?
I'm with you. What are some inspiring projects or initiatives that you've come across recently that you feel are creating really amazing change?
I work with two different programs that have been set up by two different amazing women. There's the Be Kinder project here on the east coast of Australia, which is going into schools and actually teaching kids, especially in primary schools, to be kinder. And then there's a compassion project being done over in Perth, which with Catherine, which is also an amazing project. She works mainly with high school students about teaching high school students about compassion and kindness. And they've actually, through me, they've just joined up and they're actually doing a lot of stuff together because the two actually are really synergistic with each other. But those are two amazing things that are actually happening within schools based on research and based on what we know about our brains and how our brains have evolved and what we get the most benefit out of them. What we get the most benefit out of is actually helping each other. And then there's the Upschools program by Gavin McCormack and co. And that's also amazing. So that's all online and it's most of it's free, where they have a whole bunch of projects for kids to do where they're actually doing things to benefit other people so they can raise funds to build schools over in Asia. They can write a book and then all the proceeds from the book go to different charities. Yeah, they do some really amazing stuff. And there's a whole bunch of courses on there that are free for teachers to use so that they've got more time to spend with the students. I think Upschool is a really good initiative. And then there's values-based education over in the UK. That's been around a while now, but teaching kids about the values and what's important for them so that they go on to have good values when they leave school. Those are some of the projects that I think are really cool at the moment and need more support.
Yeah, awesome. To finish off, what are some books or some resources that you'd recommend to our listeners?
How We Learn is a really awesome, if you want the hardcore, well, not that hardcore, but the science behind How We Learn, if you're a teacher. How We Learn by Stanislas Dehaene, he's a French researcher, is an excellent book that goes through all of the neuroscience from the last 15, 20 years. And I think that's a really good resource for teachers and hasn't been noticed anywhere near as much as I think it should be. That would be my go-to. He's an amazing scientist and has done some really cool stuff, especially around reading and how we read, but also how we actually learn, which is really cool.
Any parting thoughts before we wrap up today, Mark?
A huge amount of research now showing that being empathic and actually helping someone else is actually better for you than it is for the other person. So you get a huge amount of endorphins released in your brain and you get oxytocin and serotonin, which is hugely really beneficial to your mental health, but also really beneficial to your cardiovascular system. So you actually live longer if you actually help other people or if you just spend time with other people face-to-face in real life. So, volunteer, do something good where you're actually giving time to someone else for no reason other than the fact that it's really good for you and it's going to be really good for you long term. So, do something like that. Volunteering's gone down in this country dramatically over the last 15 years. And I think that's really sad. And I think we should do more of it because it's better for you than it is for the people who are supposedly benefiting from it.
Mark, thank you so much for your time and the work that you're continuing to do and the research that you're bridging into the world and helping people to connect those dots and make really practical and actionable and evident transformation in their life.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me along, Sarah.
Thanks for listening to Impact Boom. You'll find links to the initiatives, people and resources mentioned in this podcast on impactboom.org. Please leave your comments below. And remember, we'll be publishing fresh inspiration and insights to help you create positive impact every week on the website, Facebook page and Twitter.